Welcome to NDU's Interviews. The National Drug Early Warning System is funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse to the University of Florida. In this podcast series, we'll be talking with the NDU's Coordinating Center, Sentinel Site Directors, and our Scientific Advisory Group. We want to learn more about emerging drug trends, substance use in the United States today, and how our researchers became involved in this field. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. I'm Sarah Barnes. I am the communication specialist at NDU's.
Hi, I'm Damali Dorsey. I am a senior at Florida State University, and currently I am the National Institute on Drug Abuse summer scholar at NDU's.
Hey, Damali, it's our first episode, and I'm so excited that we got to talk with Dr. Joseph Palmar. He's one of the co-investigators on NDU's.
Yes, yeah, Sarah, you're right. Dr. Palmar is also an associate professor in the area of tobacco, alcohol, and drug use in the Department of Population Health at New York University. Currently, Dr. Palmar is the social media editor for the Drug and Alcohol Dependence Journal. His research focuses on the use of party drugs such as ketamine, MDMA, cocaine, and GHB.
Dr. Palmar is going to talk a lot about drug checking and GHB and a lot about the club scene, the tunnel. But first, he's going to tell us how he started his career in criminal justice.
Really, I was supposed to be a police officer. I'm from a family of civil servants. Where I come from, police officers, pretty much the best job you could have ever. And I was finishing off that degree and I was getting ready to start the NYPD. I was pretty much hired. I just was not old enough to start yet. And I started frequenting the underground New York City club scene. I stepped into this huge club called The Tunnel for the first time in 1998 and it changed my life. I didn't want to leave. And I guess in some respects, I never left because I'm still researching that scene. I turned down the police job and I went to grad school to focus on drug research. And I've been doing it ever since. It's been over 20 years. So it's been quite an interesting journey, I'd say.
So you're in New York, you're going to the tunnel, and you're exposed to the nightclub scene and all manner of cutting edge illegal substances. I wanted to talk specifically with you about the substance GHB or gamma hydroxybutyrate.
I started frequenting this other club called Sound Factory around 1999 or so. And within a year or so, I noticed that the drugs started changing a lot. My first few years going out, ecstasy was everywhere. Ketamine was everywhere. But then this drug GHB started really becoming prevalent by about 2000 or so. And it hit the gay scene a year or two before that. And people started dropping like flies. People would call it liquid ecstasy because it feels a lot like ecstasy and it feels like alcohol a little bit also. And it was sold in health food stores at the time. I mean, it was sold in health food stores until about 98, 99, I don't recall the year, but people found out that this is a sleep aid, but people found out if you take small doses, you get high as hell. So people started taking it into the nightclubs and using it on its own or combining it with ecstasy or alcohol. That's a bad combination, by the way. And anyway, people just wanted to feel good and dance. And the thing about GHB is, if you take a little bit too much, even like one drop too much, you could fall out, meaning like you have about a minute or two to find somewhere to sit down or lay down. Otherwise, you are falling down like a ton of bricks. And this would happen left and right. People would just be dancing next to you. Like you have some young person dancing. Next thing you know, flat on the floor, can't be woken up, a temporary coma. And the friends or bouncers have to carry the person out. And it was interesting because security and the patrons alike kind of knew that since it's GHB, the person's going to wake up within an hour. So the ambulance was almost never called. And these clubs actually tended to have little side like closet areas, like rooms where they would store the unconscious bodies. And you would like, if you found this room and looked in it at any given time, you see someone like knocked out on the floor with people pouring like ice on somebody's head or whatever. So that just really destroyed the scene. That went on for years and people became desensitized to it. People were falling out left and right on GHB at the clubs I attended. And this club called Twilo, internationally recognized, biggest DJs like Carl Cox, Sasha and Digweed, big people played there. And it got closed down in 2001 because of all the overdoses going on. So it kind of destroyed the club scene for a while. And I'm scared that it's coming back. It's not the most dangerous drug, but when people use it at nightclubs, it's usually bad news.
At this point in the conversation, we talk with Dr. Palomar on his new paper he authors with primary investigator Dr. Linda Cutler and NIDA T32 pre-doctoral fellow Nicole Fitzgerald on drug adulteration.
There's drug adulteration and then there's contamination. Adulteration is when there's a drug like ecstasy and you think it's ecstasy, but it contains something like bath salts. It could be 10% bath salts or 100% bath salts. That's adulteration. Usually it implies that somebody intentionally mixed it in there. It's more common with powders like Molly. Is supposed to be pure MDMA powder or crystal. But a lot of times I found it's the furthest thing from pure. So adulteration is when there are other drugs mixed in that should not be there. Contamination is when a drug is mixed in, typically by accident. Like if you have bath salts or fentanyl on a scale and you don't clean the scale well enough and then you're cutting some MDMA on there to sell, and it gets mixed in by accident, that's more like contamination. Each could be harmful depending on what's mixed in. And we have tested people's hair and detected flocka in people's hair that said they've never touched a bath salt. So to me, that's a bit of a scary situation. You think you're using Molly and there's flocka mixed in with it. There's a lot of meth mixed in with ecstasy also. And a lot of people just don't realize it. What I'm finding, and I think it's kind of sad because I talked about my old club days where everybody was on ecstasy. People back then knew what ecstasy was supposed to feel like. Today, a lot of these young kids who take this Molly stuff, they're so used to using adulterated drugs, like drugs with bath salts in it or other stimulants, that they think that a lot of them think that ecstasy is supposed to feel more like amphetamine or meth, but it's not. You know, you might get someone who all of a sudden is feeling very loving and wants to hug you, and they think something is wrong. Like, no, that's the effect that ecstasy is supposed to have. There's nothing wrong. You probably just got ecstasy for the first time. So that is what is going on. And what's even more serious is fentanyl making its way into the drug supply. We all know that fentanyl has been the biggest drug-related issue in the US for the past, you know, 5, 6 plus years. But yeah, there are a lot of people who use it intentionally, but a lot of people use it unknowingly. It pops up in heroin all the time. In fact, a lot of people who use heroin, at least on the East Coast today, expect that there will probably be fentanyl mixed in there. Some people don't mind, some people want it, and other people dread it. What I find particularly scary is that there are a lot of reports of other like party drugs that test positive for fentanyl, drugs like cocaine. I find that really scary because there are a lot of people who use cocaine recreationally at bars or college parties who have never touched an opioid before. If there is fentanyl or a fentanyl analog in there, you could seriously be hospitalized or even die. There was a bunch of cases that happened right here in New York City last year. So that's really scary. So adulteration is something we really need to keep our eye on. I'm primarily a survey researcher. So the main thing I think I at least originally brought to the table was the rapid survey that I developed during my NIDA K award. When I applied for my K award, it's like a training award through NIDA like many years ago. I wrote in the application, like, there's this new thing called NDUS that's about to start up. And I hope that one day I could be involved and maybe my survey could help them out. And next thing you know, about five or six years later, I'm part of NDUS and we're going to start using my rapid survey. It actually makes me really happy. It's cool. It's being used for something other than my nightclub research. I'm also very interested in toxicology testing. I'm not an expert in tox, but you know, I'm very experienced in hair testing. I don't do the hair testing. My colleague in Italy does that. But I'm very interested in comparing biological test results to survey results because there's something called discordant reporting that is an issue. That is when people say, oh, I've never used this drug. And then their hair or urine or saliva test positive for it. Then you have to figure out, did this person intentionally deny use, maybe because of stigma, or they didn't read the question, or were they exposed and they didn't know it? So that's what we try and figure out by using a combination of survey and toxicology testing. So that is something I promoted about myself when we were trying to put together our new NDUS team. And I'm hoping we can move forward with some of this stuff.
Well, that was the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at NDUS News or join our subscription list for our weekly briefing at NDUS.org. See you again soon.